a little bit past 5 p.m. It's not too late today, I hope, everyone. Thank you for staying with us and staying tuned in. Time for American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. I'm Tom Ryan. My lovely wife and co-host Heidi Morales Ryan here as well.
That's right.
Both of us a bit winded from trying to struggle to get in here on this weird and wet Wednesday. Suddenly wet Wednesday.
Surprise.
But we can get right to what we're going to do. I thought that today, we've been doing an awful lot of shows based on our album, our alternative top 40 choices, and I'm trying to basically intersperse other shows in between that kind of go back to what we used to be doing all the time, the anniversary shows and such. And I figured, okay, 2015, we go back to 95. Let me see what happened in 95. And there were plenty of, you know, really very good, you know, popular albums that were released 20 years ago in April of 95. Pavement, Guided by Voices, Duran Duran, Mobb Deep, King Crimson, they all had major releases. That's just to name a few. But I noticed that, like, my focus around this time, when I go back to 20 years ago this month, it all tends to, like, veer toward stuff that was much more obscure than that.
Yes.
The three albums that I want to cover today are definitely not household names. Red House Painters, Kevin Gilbert, and Shaq are the three bands that I would like to discuss today, or artists, I should say, to discuss. The Wikipedia doesn't even mention that albums were released by any of these three people in the year 1995. So when I looked up...
So where'd you go for your information?
Well, I just looked at release dates for these actual CDs. I just find that these account for some of the more interesting music from this particular month. And since, even though you probably won't recognize the stuff that I'm about to play, I think it'd be fun to basically turn you on to some stuff that you might not know. And it's never too late to catch up, even if it is 20 years later, especially if the music is good. So let's get right into it. And the first band that I want to cover is going to be Red House Painters. Now, I can't help but tell a personal story on this one because it's just so weird, but it's true. Turns out that the Red House Painters is a band that I was moderately familiar with around in the late 90s. I was a big fan of Mark Eitzel of American Music Club. They were a band that I was like really, a San Francisco band that was really impressing the heck out of me in the late 90s. And I was buying up their stuff. And Mark Eitzel was the lead singer and the main songwriter of the band. They were on 4AD as their label at the time. And through Mark, I had heard of, as a fan reading some of his stuff, I had heard of this band called the Red House Painters and became curious enough to pick up some of their stuff. What I didn't know at that time was that the guitar player in the Red House Painters was my brother, Gordon.
Right.
Now, the reason, it sounds ridiculous to say that, but it was my kid brother, Gordon. He's about 10 years younger than me. At the time, I didn't know this because I was adopted and I hadn't yet found my birth family. It wasn't until the early 2000s that I actually found my birth family. That's what, you know, my name is Tom Ryan. That's my adoptive name. My birth name was David Mack. Gordon is Gordon Mack. So when I look at the Red House Painter's CD, I see the name Gordon Mack. It's not like I immediately had this connection of, gee, I wonder if we could be related. Because, you know, I was told that my birth name was David Mack, but I didn't really, I don't know, either I didn't believe it or I just thought
it just
that.
It didn't sink in.
It didn't really sink in because I'm thinking, like, in New York, you're not supposed to know that stuff. Why would I have this knowledge? But the family that raised me, you know, my adoptive family just had made it known to me when, ever since I was a kid, that I was adopted. That was no issue. And they mentioned the name. And by the way, I would suggest that to everybody in the world, if you're going through a similar situation, the best way to have, you know, no issue in the future is to make sure that there's no issue when the, you know, at childhood. The chance, a kid will likely accept it.
Be
open about it. It's easy to basically accept it. I mean, for me, it was great. I felt that my parents grabbed me because they wanted me. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. The funny thing is, here I am now. Like, I find my birth mother, and she turns out that my birth mother married my birth father sometime after they had given me up for adoption because they were just really like teenagers. They were kids, really, by the time I was born. By the time Gordon was born, 10 years later, they were in their mid-20s. And like I said, Gordon was 10 years younger than me. They were all moved to California. They were in the San Francisco area. So that was when I basically met Gordon. I have three brothers that I didn't meet until I was 41. So it's a whole new weird thing, and it puts a whole new spin on my opinion of the band Red House Painters now when I hear about them, because knowing that my brother was really the person who had created an awful lot of the music that was used for their albums. Now, the lead songwriter and lead vocalist of the band wasn't Gordon, my brother. It was Mark Kozlik. Mark, still making music, still getting like loads of lauds and praise for the records that he's been putting out as of lately. I know that on Record Store Day right now, what was considered the single most rare find,
the coveted,
yeah, it was a box set of Red House Paint, of the original Red House Painters albums, all of the work that was done with my brother Gordon as the guitar player. Well, what they had done, they released a couple of albums, and there were these really sort of dark, very moody albums. And then in 1995, they released a lighter album, by their standards anyway, much lighter album, called Ocean Beach. It was also a lot simpler because it was definitely much more controlled by Mark Kozlik than by the rest of the band. So my brother doesn't play as much of a role on it. But it's still quite an excellent album, with or without Gordon. Sorry, Gordon, but it's worth playing. And this is 20 years old now. So from the album entitled Ocean Beach, here's Red House Painters with a track called Summer Dress.
Summer dress makes you more beautiful than the rest. Loveliest girl that I know and the sweetest. Spends her life inside. She thinks she isn't blessed. Summer dress separates you from the rest. Easiest days of her life have been spent. Wonders if she is loved or if she is missed. Says a prayer by ocean mist. Takes herself to the sand and dreams. Says a prayer as she's kissed by ocean. Herself to the sand and dream.
It's a funny thing whenever I listen to Mark Kozlik's music, because I don't know who had an effect on who. I would imagine that there's, you know, Mark toward my brother, but when I hear, because my brother still is making CDs, Gordon has put out a couple of projects of his own. Well, the most recent one that I'm aware of is something called Florida Man. It's the name of his nom de plume for his most recent CD. And to me, a lot of the writing sounds like Mark Kozelek's writing. It's very introspective, very autobiographical in a lot of ways, and not unlike what we had just heard. So it's interesting to me that they were basically in a band together. And it was around this time when they began to fall out, and then the band fell apart. This one, Kozelek began to go solo. But what had happened was, because the band wasn't having as much input on this particular record, even the label wasn't happy about that, apparently. And originally, when 4AD got the recordings for Ocean Beach, they turned it down. They said they weren't going to release it. So that also caused a lot of tension. Eventually, it didn't matter. You know, Mark just did what he wanted to do, and so be it. That was that. And Gordon's doing the same thing now, mostly basically just living his life with his family and, you know, getting on with it and recording projects whenever he wants to and when he can.
And he's been writing some good stuff, too.
And he's been writing some great stuff. Like I said, I think it's available on the internet. If you're interested in hearing the music of my brother, Gordon Mack, you could check it out. Just look on the internet, I think, for Florida Man. I think, like I said, you'll find that as well.
This is odd because he's not really from Florida at all.
No, the name was actually a joke because he says, like, whenever you see a newspaper article that says Florida Man, because you know it's going to be
dot,
a weird
dot,
article.
Dot.
Yeah,
yes.
Dot, dot, dot. That's kind of where he came up with that.
That's funny.
So, be that as I know it's a weird story also, telling you coming at this album from that perspective with, you know, Gordon being my brother and all, and not yet not being aware of that until after the fact. But, I enjoy the Red House Painters a lot now, and I really am a big fan also of Mark Kozelek stuff as well. So let's hear another track from the same album called Ocean Beach. This song is called San Geronimo.
Can't it sound right?
called San Geronimo from the Red House Painters album Ocean Beach.
Am I on?
yeah, very catchy. I was talking about the box set that came out for Record Store Day based upon the Red House Painters albums, all the stuff that my brother Gordon appears on. And turns out that, like I said, it was so desirable and they made so few copies. Right now, it's trading on the internet to get that box set for about $500.
Whoa.
It's crazy. Even Gordon doesn't have a copy.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, kind of bug him that he didn't get a copy, but he's like, you know, whatever. But I figured that would be cool if I could find it and try to send it to him. So I went out on Record Store Day to about four different places, seeing if anybody had gotten it in, and none were available. Then I'm looking on the internet. I'm like, $500 for this thing. It's trading on or around there anyway on eBay. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But you can get the stuff very easily on CD, though. It's totally available on CD. So if you're interested in the Red House Painters, you don't have to be laying out that sort of money. It's fine. You can find these albums, including this one, Ocean Beach, without too much trouble on CD. And even as I understand it, the box sets, the discs that are in it are going to be eventually released individually outside of the box. So even that is eventually going to end up not being as valuable as it is now, probably. The price will probably go down. Now, since we're telling weird stories about albums, and I got to admit, all three of these weird obscure records that I want to play today, they've all got sort of like a dark side. You know, there's a bit of a darkness over them. I mean, Red House Painters, Mark Kozlik is a moody writer, no doubt about it. And the next artist that I want to talk about, Kevin Gilbert, has got a story that is equally dark and weird, particularly because of his connection with Sheryl Crow. Now, the circumstances of his death are ridiculously embarrassing. At the time, it was like almost stunningly embarrassing. And I guess enough time has passed. We've heard enough about people dying from autoerotic asphyxiation here and there in the past couple of decades that maybe it's not as much of a freaky thing now to hear about it. But 20 years ago, when I heard that Kevin Gilbert was found dead with a black hood over his head, wearing a skirt with a leather strap that had him chained to his own bed. That's how they found him dead. It was like, oh my God, like what an undignified way to go. And it's so sad because the guy was incredibly talented, obviously a person with a couple of issues. As I could read this straight from an article that was printed up in a Los Angeles magazine around the time of his death in 1996. Colleagues invariably called him the most talented musician I have ever met. But to the rest of the world, his only real claim to fame lies in the credits to Tuesday Night Social Club, that 1993 debut album by Sheryl Crow. As the article goes, here's a quote. I saw something in Entertainment magazine that said Kevin Gilbert, the piano player on Sheryl Crow's record, had died, said songwriter David Bayerwald, a member of the Tuesday Club of the album's name. He paused, sadly shaking his head. He hated that Sheryl Crow record, and that's always going to be known for. The piano player? Roll over, Kevin Gilbert. It's really true. What happened? Well, when Gilbert first brought his then-girlfriend, Sheryl, to informal Tuesday night songwriting sessions with his friends, he played a really important role in shaping an $85 million mega hit. For her, the album brought three Grammys, stardom, and an industry buzz that makes her next CD one of the most eagerly anticipated releases of that entire season. But for Kevin Gilbert, it was hardly a triumph at all. I don't know if I can ever forgive her, he wrote in his journal. I don't hate her. I'm just so disappointed. In a way, it's a classic Hollywood tale. Gifted boy artist meets girl artist, mentors her to success, and is left in the dust. Equal parts Sunset Boulevard, Star is Born, and All About Eve. By any measure, Gilbert's career was a fitful tumble of brilliance and happenstance, a series of near misses and one hit that wasn't his. And his Tuesday night cohorts describe Crow, who refused to be interviewed for this story, as a marginally talented singer who exploited his skills and theirs in a ruthless grab for success. As a South Bay teenager, Gilbert was given the run of Sunnyvale Sensa Sound Studio after hours. There, he recorded tracks with his progressive rock group, Giraffe. In 1988, he won the U.S. and worldwide finals of a talent contest run by the Yamaha Piano Company. One of the judges, a producer from Madonna, invited Gilbert to make a record in Los Angeles. That album, called Toy Matinee, sold about 200,000 copies in 1991 and had a video on MTV that featured Rosanna Arquette. Gilbert put together a road version of his band that included his then-girlfriend on backing vocals and second keyboard, Sheryl Crow. While making that album, Gilbert met another record producer named Bill Bottrell, who became sort of a father figure to him. Bottrell brought him to sessions for Madonna and Michael Jackson, and before long, Gilbert had sublet space adjacent to where Bottrell's studio was, and then he set about recording his own solo debut. Drawing on all of his perfectionist instincts, along with all of his ingrained self-doubts, he didn't just work on his record, he suffered over it, recording and re-recording, polishing, tweaking, rethinking, redoing. In August of 1992, Bottrell basically convened Gilbert and a few other musicians, who he knew from his own studio, with a very simple of agenda of collaborating for the fun of it on every Tuesday night. It was meant as a way to get Gilbert out of his workaholic ways and get him to basically work for fun with other musicians. "We were all pretty good, not to be immodest," David Bayerwald said. "We were also all cynical, embittered by the process of pop music. We were trying to find some joy in music again. A party atmosphere predominated." Meanwhile, Crow had finished an album for A&M Records, but despite spending $500,000 on it, nobody at the label was thrilled with the results, didn't want to release it, and said that they wanted her to rework it. So, hoping for a quick fix, A&M hired Kevin Gilbert, her boyfriend, to remix the album, which was, in the immutable logic of the record industry, already scheduled for release. So, Bottrell and Gilbert figured, okay, we'll bring Crow down to Tuesday night. We're all working. She can sit in, and maybe we'll help her come up with some ways to fix up her album. On her first Tuesday night with the club, Bayerwald showed up with his musical sidekick, David Rickards. By the way, you might know them from the band called David and David. Mm-hmm. They released that great album called Welcome to the Boomtown in the late 80s. Both of them were high on LSD, and they already had the first verse written for a song called Leaving Las Vegas. Bayerwald picked up the guitar, Rickards was on bass, and the band basically picked it up and went off with it. They picked up lyrics from books of poetry and stuff, and Sheryl started singing the lyrics. Eventually, it became the first hit off of her album.
Right.
For most of that year, Bottrell and his Tuesday crew basically fashioned and reshaped Crow's album. Because everything was a collaboration, songwriting credits were to be equally shared. Everybody was equal, except Sheryl. She wasn't one of us. We helped her make a record. Gilbert's name wound it up on 7 of the 11 songs. He sang, played keyboards, guitar, bass, and drums. His relationship with Crow was kept separate during the entire process, even secret from the group. "I'd see long conversations in the parking lot," is how David Bayerwald put it. When he wasn't with Crow or the club, Gilbert struggled with his own solo album, playing most of the instruments on his pop rock tracks, polished productions that showed the gleam of countless studio hours. A proposed deal, though, with a major label fell apart, so he had to make do with a tiny custom label. After nearly a year of working together, all for one and one for all, the Tuesday night musicians were shocked to learn that they didn't figure into Crow's future plans. Bottrell got the news when he met her to hand over the finished master tape in a Sunset Strip coffee shop. Although there had been much talk about hitting the road together to promote the record, the bassist, Dan Schwartz, even bought a new bass for the tour. "She essentially told me to get lost," Bottrell said. "I had Sheryl Crow to a long list of people in Hollywood who told me they were my friend until they got what they wanted from me," Schwartz added. Meanwhile, Crow's relationship with Gilbert deteriorated. "She apparently turned her attentions to an executive at the record label," Bayerwald said, and an increasingly bitter Gilbert threw himself deeper into his own album. "I think I'm a tinge jealous over her upcoming release," he wrote in his journal. "It's probably going to be huge, so I have to be mentally prepared for that. If she gets what she wants after behaving this way, she'll be absolutely intolerable."
Oh, boy.
For Gilbert, the final stir came when Crow sang Leaving Las Vegas on the David Letterman show. Afterward, Letterman asked her if the song was autobiographical, and she said, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
She says that she wrote it about Los Angeles, and it's really metaphorical. The next day, she and Gilbert exchanged angry words over the phone, and he wasn't the only one that was furious. Author John O'Brien, the person who actually wrote the book Leaving Las Vegas, that the movie was based on, was grumbling about Crow's gaffe to his literary agent on the day that he blew his own brains out, a scant few weeks before the movie deal was complete.
Wow.
As Crow's album soared on the charts, Gilbert's solo album finally did come out, totally underpromoted. He had the sick humor to name his record Thud, which is how he figured it was going to be greeted by the music industry, with a thud.
Mm-hmm.
And it vanished and went nowhere. Here's an incredibly ironic song about, well, his generation from that album Thud by Kevin Gilbert. Here's a song called Goodness Gracious.
Goodness gracious, is there nothing left to say? Well, the ones that get to keep looking are the ones that look away. It's pabulum for the sleepers in the cult of brighter days. In the cult of brighter days. Goodness gracious, at the mercy of the crooks. We're broken, stroking vegetables, and there's way too many cooks. Eat every pot a pink slip, eat every mouth a hook. Goodness gracious, I'm not listening anymore. Cause the spooks are in the White House, and they've justified a war. So wake me when they notify, we're gonna fight some more. We're gonna fight some more. Goodness gracious, not many people care. Concern is getting scarcer, true compassion really rare. I can see it on our faces, I can feel it in the air. Goodness gracious me. Gracious, my generation's lost. But burned down all our bridges before we had a chance to cross. Is it the winter of our discontent or just an early frost? Just an early frost. Goodness gracious, of apathy I sing. The baby boomers had it all. Now things were different in her day. What horrors will be commonplace when my hair starts to gray?
Great singer, great songwriter. With a, such a sad, troubled ending. Basically, you know, based around either betrayal or jealousy. And to this day, Sheryl Crow obviously is very uncomfortable with all the stories because everybody was completely dissatisfied with the way that that all turned out. Obviously, could have been handled better. Gilbert got two records out in his career, the first being this one, Thud, which I want to play another track from, and another one that came out later, which was sort of a theme record that totally, absolutely mocks the music industry from soup to nuts. It's a brilliant record. Incredibly, the arrangements of that are just rip my head off sometimes when I hear it. I'll look forward to playing that some other day, but let's play one more from the album Thud. Ironically, a song that is entitled Song for a Dead Friend.
Danny, my friend, I think you knew me better than I ever knew you. 'Cause you read every chapter and I just glossed right over them and pretended I knew. But I believed in you. You for your brilliance, your way of making everything absurd. And I relied on you to make me see the foolishness of paragraphs that were better as one word. Same conclusions, but we choose a different end. 'Cause when you tear it down, it only looks more ragged. And when you build it up, it only looks more fake. Just might see your sad mistake. Cause life had more to give than what you take. Danny, my friend, forgive me if I break our rule, but I think it's overdue. I really cared about you and I didn't think that I could love a friend as much as I loved you. And we were always friends. Captain Jim and Billy, the superhuman crime-avenging twins. Oh, I'm gonna miss you, and I truly am alone now, 'cause there's no one to congratulate my sins. I wish I could have been for you. assistant friend. The chapters that I skipped, I'm gonna have to read again. But when I tear it down, it only looks more ragged. And when I build it up, it only looks more fake. But I can't let it be, 'cause part of me died with you. And there's lots of pages missing from my book. Cause you had more to give than what I took.
Beautiful, thoughtful song from Kevin Gilbert, and sadly ironic in the way that it could have applied to his own life after he had died just a short time after writing that song. Those are tracks from an album called Thud. Good luck finding it. It's obscure, still is obscure. I guess it's possible to find in this digital age. It shouldn't be impossible. But, I mean, I found it, so I guess I imagine that it can be dug up one way or another. So there's two obscure albums. A third one to go. We had the Red House Painters record, Ocean Beach, Kevin Gilbert with Thud. And my third is from a pair of brothers out of Liverpool. Same place as the Beatles, of course. Brothers Michael and John Head. And another album that's got a weird story attached to it. They were in a band called the Pale Fountains, and eventually that went their own way. And then they formed a second band called Shack. And that's the band that I want to discuss. The band Shack, an album called Water Pistol, which was their first album. Now, we're talking about albums that were released in 1995. This album actually began to be recorded in 1989.
Wow.
They were working on it. They pretty much completed it in 1991. Were getting prepared for release when the recording studio that they were recording in caught on fire.
Ooh.
Destroyed all of the tapes completely. However, they had heard that their producer, thank God, was smart enough to take
backup tapes.
One backup DAT copy of it when he went on vacation to the United States. So they contacted him to say, we desperately need this. Problem was, whenever they reached him, whether it was before or after, I don't know the exact scenario, but he had left that tape in a cab.
Oh, no.
And it was lost. So now the album is totally gone. It was eventually, believe it or not, somehow found again from the cab or the rental company, wherever it was in the car. They eventually were able to retrieve
it. They located it.
And it was finally able to see daylight by 1995 when the album was released. Ridiculously late after the fact. But to me, this is like some of the most melodic and beautiful music that had been made in a long time. I don't know why these guys never got famous, quite frankly. I understand how the Red House Painters are an acquired taste, because there's something, the dark. I understand why the Kevin Gilbert album, the same sort of thing, the way it wouldn't be huge. Shaq, I definitely expect that when I heard this the first time, I'm like, how come these guys aren't huge? From the album Water Pistol, here's a track called Sergeant Major. We'll be right back. two tracks there in a row from the band Shack off of an album called Water Pistol, an album that almost never happened from due to crazy circumstances. But yeah. Really an interesting record, great melodies and everything. And this is a band worth looking into. Obviously a total sleeper. I mean, I don't think I know anybody who knows the band Shack here in America. Nobody's ever spoken a word about them to me. I just heard about them through the grapevine and picked up a couple of their records and was stunned to see how much I really enjoyed them. They remind me a lot of bands like Stone Roses almost a little bit, or like a post, if Echo and the Bunnymen stayed good into the 90s with the stuff that they were doing.
Arctic Monkeys or something.
Yeah, something like that, all of that. So we'll leave, you only got time for one more, so we'll play one more track from the Shack album. As I said, it's called Water Pistol. The name of this song is Dragonfly. Take care, everybody. Thanks a lot. Hope you enjoyed hearing some totally different stuff on a Wednesday afternoon, and we'll be back on Friday as we start a new series for the How Music Change series. Stax Records coming up on Friday. See you then.